This is the Official Titans Podcast. I'm Mike Keith with Amy Wells. Amy, hello.
Hello, how are
you? You know, I have a lot of favorite NFL writers. I'm fine, by the way.
Good.
Not to just move on to what I was reading off
Yeah, he ignored you.
That's okay.
I have a lot of favorite NFL writers, but Pete Prisco is right at the top of my list. He knows this. I have bragged about it to his face before.
You have.
CBS Sports. Welcome, Pete Prisco.
How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
You know, if there is any better follow on Twitter than Pete Prisco, I don't know who it is because I think you argue with everybody.
I do.
You enjoy it.
Yeah, I do. It's like going to the bar and having a beer and arguing sports with people. That's what Twitter is for me.
But all the time. It never stops. You never have to leave.
Now,
yeah, you can leave. You just get out of there for a while and then you clear your head and come back in.
But we've talked before. I feel like I know your personality. So when I read your Twitter, I understand that it's not personal. This is just who you are. You don't mean anything ugly towards anybody.
No.
You could see if people don't know you, however, that it could be taken as snapping somebody
off. The angry old man. That's what they say. Yeah. No, that's not me.
If it's something about the SEC, because you're an Arizona State guy.
Correct.
You have no patience for the SEC. You think the SEC is horribly overrated.
No, I love the SEC.
Okay.
It's a great conference, but I'm envious.
You're envious?
Yeah.
Okay. It was like when Josh Dobbs decommitted from Arizona State and decided to go to Tennessee, you were furious.
Yes.
This is starting to feel personal.
Well, but I'm saying this is what you get. The other famous thing, the Russell Wilson feud.
There was another one, too. It was the Tebow one. That kind of was.
That still goes around a little bit. But the Russell Wilson, explain how the Russell Wilson thing works with you on Twitter and who you're sparring partner is about that.
Mike Freeman. Who is Russell Wilson's personal PR man, I think, even though he works in the media industry. Look, I think Russell Wilson is good. I don't think he's great. I think he's very good, but I don't think he's great. So everybody wants to rush him up, calling him elite quarterback. There's only so many elite quarterbacks in this league. You have Brady, Rodgers, Breeze, and Roethlisberger. And Roethlisberger's tailing off a little bit, but that's it. The rest of the guys are all, you know, lump them in. You know, 5 through 13, you can interchange them. So I don't think he's great. He's very good. So Freeman obviously thinks he's great. So that's how that all started, and we get into it and back and forth.
Give me your rankings, though. Like, what determines an elite quarterback in your mind? What's the standard there?
Can you carry a team? Do you cure ills? And if you look at the Patriots, they've had a lot of ills over the years, and he cures them. Look at the Packers. When Rodgers goes out there, not the same, close to being the same team. Roethlisberger, same way. And Breeze is special. So can you carry a team, and do you cure problem areas? And I think that's how you can define it. Now, if I was Seattle, and this is going to sound strange saying this, I would build that thing around Russell Wilson right now. Because the old, and you guys know this in Tennessee, the old archaic ways of running the football and playing good defense, that's not how you win anymore. You look at the Eagles. They won that Super Bowl. They had a good defense, but they won the Super Bowl because they were aggressive and played that way. I think you have to, with the rules the way they are, you have to build around Russell Wilson.
Do you like the game right now in the NFL?
I do, because I like strategy. I like creativity. I don't like the old, you know, don't get me wrong. I grew up on it. I loved the game as a kid when they played power football and ran the football. But I used to sit there, and I remember as a kid, my dad, we were Giants fans, and he'd yell, run, pass, you know. It's just not the way you play the game anymore. It's pass to set up the run, not run to set up the pass. And so I think we're getting to that more and more. And in Tennessee last year, exotic smash mouth wasn't so exotic.
And not as exotic as it was in 2016.
And he said it was going to be exotic.
He did.
And it wasn't exotic. I think you need to be creative. And I think this new regime in Tennessee will be creative.
You like the Matt LaFleur hire as the offensive coordinator?
I do. I like young, rising coach. I really like the Vrabel hire, by the way.
Why so much?
Because he's one of those guys that commands a room. When he walks in, he commands a room. You just feel the presence. He's a former player. He's played for good coaches. He's coached under good coaches. And he walks in, and you just feel the – and he's not going to get too caught up in all the minutiae, I don't think, and because he's been a player, and he understands it. Look, Mularkey was a player, too, but Mike got too caught up in all the other stuff. I don't think Vrabel's going to do that, and I think he's going to let his coaches coach. He's already you heard him when he came out. Oh, we're not going to run into nine-man fronts. We're going to be aggressive. We're going to throw the football. And he's smart that way. And I think getting a young, innovative coach like LaFleur coming from that McVay, who is very aggressive, I think they're going to be aggressive on offense.
The thing that has struck me about the Titans coaching hires from head coach all the way down through the entire staff is the mix of young and up-and-comers, but also some veterans, even in our coordinators. Dean Pease, veteran coach, has been around the league a long time. Matt LaFleur, young up-and-comer. How helpful is that going to be to this team that they have that mix of both?
Yeah, I think that's good. Like you saw that with the Rams. They had Wade Phillips as defensive coordinator, and they had, you know, young offensive coordinator. So I think that's a good thing to have the good mix of the old. And they got Dean Pease out of retirement. So he was, you know, and he obviously wants to coach with Mike Vrabel. That's a good thing.
And he's a guy that is established. What do you think he can bring to this defense?
Yeah, look, he's going to bring an aggressive approach. And one thing about Mike Vrabel, too, he took people, when they hired him, he said, well, his defense wasn't very good the year he coordinated it. He lost J.J. Watt. He lost Whitney Mercilus. He had injuries on the back end. Brian Cushing was hurt for a bunch of the year and got suspended. So you can't – I don't care who you are, you're not coordinating defense without players, and you need players.
Is the rest of the national media ready to stop making fun of the AFC South now?
It might be one of the best divisions in football this year. If Andrew Luck comes back and is the same Andrew Luck, that's the big if. If he comes back and he's the same Andrew Luck, they're going to be the Colts, and they have a lot of young talent on that team. The Jaguars are going to be very good. The Titans are going to be good. And the Texans, if they get Watson back where he was and Watt and Mercilus come back, they're going to be good. So any one of the four teams can win the division, and I think it's going to be a really good football division.
Listen to that. Write that down. He said it. One of the best divisions.
Might be the best. But
see?
Top to bottom.
It might be. If Luck comes back, they're going to be. It might be the best division.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could have a two or a three game space between first and last in the division.
Yeah, they're going to beat up on each other this year.
And their schedules are tougher too, based on where they're having to play, the divisions they're having to play. Last year, the schedules worked out favorably for both the Titans and the Jaguars. The Titans, unfortunately, didn't take advantage of it when they had some opportunities. The Jaguars took more of an advantage of it. The difference, really, in the season ended up being Jacksonville went to Pittsburgh and won. Tennessee went to Pittsburgh and did not win.
Right.
I mean, the key, and that's really, as tough as it is for a Titan to say, the difference in their season, the difference in where they went, going, obviously, to the AFC Championship game, is they took a major step in the process, proving that they could go to Heinz Field and win twice.
And did it by scoring a lot of points. I mean, that, you know, that's the one thing you don't do at Pittsburgh. You know, they're the only team in history that's gone to Pittsburgh and won twice in the same season, and they've done it twice. I mean, they did it in 2007 when they were last in the playoffs, and they did it again this year. That doesn't happen. Look, they should have beat New England.
They had them.
They should have been. When you supposedly are a defensive-minded team and you have a 10-point lead, I don't care if it's against Tom Brady, and you're facing 3rd and 18, the Patriots had 3rd and 18 and converted on 3rd and 18. That shouldn't happen. Now, some of their defensive guys got hurt. I mean, Campbell got hurt in the second series and played through it, and Ngakoue was on the sidelines because he got hurt. So, you know, there's some, but you blitz them. They stay back and play coverage, and they blew the coverage and converted on 3rd and 18. They stop them there. They go to the Super Bowl.
Give me what your relationship is like now with Tom Coughlin compared to when you covered the Jaguars on a daily basis back in the 90s.
He's warmed up to me.
What's warmed up mean compared to where it was?
Well, he used to call my house and cuss me out on a regular basis. So, you know, he doesn't do that anymore.
So did he start the conversation, Pete, it's Tom, or did he just start immediately and you knew?
No, it was you. Beep, 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 beep. Don't ever give those players an excuse. Beep, 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 beep. He called me at 6:30 in the morning one morning. And I told him I had been out with my brother. And I'm like, Tom, do I call you at your house at 6:30 in the morning? Don't call me. And I hung up on him.
You hung up on the head coach?
He's screaming at me.
What about?
It was the first year in 95. They went to Stevens Point, Wisconsin for 6 weeks of training camp.
Oh.
Six. And he beat the daylights out of them. I mean, beat them up. Well, they played a preseason game in Miami, and instead of breaking camp, they went back again. Then they go to Detroit and play their last preseason game, and the old Silver Dome had no air conditioning. And it was the hottest summer ever up there, so it was like 110 in that building. And the players, they got this, it was like 45-7 or something. And I walked into the locker room. This is on a Thursday night. I walk into the locker room, and they go, we have no legs. He killed us. So I have my story. Legs are gone. Coughlin killed him. So I write it, fly home. I had been in Stevens Point for 6 weeks. I go out with my brother. We go. I was living with my brother then. He comes in, knocks on the door, Coughlin. I go, 6:30? Put it on my phone. Hello? He goes, he starts railing on me. And I go, that's what I told him. I said, I hung up on him. Yeah, we used to have some, I mean, he came at me a bunch of different ways, but I love the guy. I love it. When I left, I took the job, which where I am now in 2000, in the middle of the season, was then Sportsline. And I went. I remember I went to him and I say, hey, Tom, I just want to let you know I'm leaving. I'm going to Sportsline. And I shook his hand and he said, respect. And I said, nothing but respect. If you worked hard, he respected you. He didn't like it. I mean, he hated it, but if you did the work, he respected you. I love the guy. He's like, I was with him on his, when he won the first year when he was in New York. I went to every one of those. I was covering those games. I went to every one of them. And I remember he came off. Remember the Green Bay game when it was freezing out and his face was all red?
I thought he was going to lose part of his face. Yeah. I was scared to death for him.
Yeah, by the way, that was the coldest game I've ever been at. And you remember, were you doing the games when you've done them the whole time?
The whole time.
Do you remember the game in New England, in the playoff game when the Titans played in New England?
I do.
Remember how cold it was
that
day?
Yes, I do.
This was worse.
Yes.
Like way worse. So I'm in there and he comes walking out. His face is beat red. He goes to the podium. And he looks at me, walks off, and he goes, you're the only guy who picked us. I said, how do you know? You used to tell me you never read anything.
Well, I just remember, Amy, I don't mean to interrupt your time, but this is a great story. So we play in the AFC Championship game at Jacksonville in January of 2000. And I am sick that week. I mean, so sick I can't get out of bed. They load me on the plane to go down on Friday, and I mean, I'm beyond ill. They put me to bed, gave me something. I slept for like 16 hours. I get up Saturday night, and I finally feel well enough to do a little bit of work. Well, we'd seen Jacksonville twice, so I kind of knew them. We had played on Christmas Eve, so I still had my notes from that game, so that was going to be okay. Well, they're doing a show on television from the landing, and it is the Jacksonville Jaguar pep rally. They've just beaten Miami 62-7.
Right.
They're going to crush us. They are the most talented overall team in football, and they are going to crush us, and they are celebrating before the game. So they go to everybody's picks, and here's Freddie, the weatherman, and Jacksonville, 50-0. Here's so-and-so with WWRZ, Rooster Country. Oh, and his pick is Jacksonville, 45-2. And then there's Pete Prisco in front of all these people. You picked the Titans.
I did?
You did?
I don't remember that.
That's bold.
You did?
Because I still think the
Jaguars. I mean, they booed.
I probably did it just to irritate them.
Well, it worked.
I thought the Jaguars were the better team.
They were the better team.
But they didn't beat them at all that year.
But
They weren't tough enough.
I don't know what it was.
I used to tell them that.
But it's like in basketball. There are just certain matchups that don't fit. The Titans and the Ravens in those years were like that. The Titans had a better team in 2000, but it was the wrong sort of matchup.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Coughlin because actually there's a Titans game that year, and you'll remember this, that led to one of his great rants on me. You remember the first one? It was in the rain.
Pouring down rain.
You remember the end of that game?
100%.
All he needed was a field goal to send the game into overtime.
Correct.
And he decided he was going to throw into the end zone, and Samari Roll picked off Mark Brunell in the end zone. Well, Coughlin comes to the podium after the game and kind of lays Brunell out in front of the media. You don't do that. I heard the next day he brought him into his office and just railed on him, just reamed him. So the players all come to me and they say, hey, there's a real problem with the coach at quarterback. You got to get to the bottom of this. So I go sniffing around. I go, I can write this, but I need, you know, sources and a couple of them. Well, I ended up getting them. The paper wasn't comfortable with just unnamed sources, so they made me write it as a column on Sunday. So the column comes out on Sunday. They're playing in Pittsburgh that day.
Oh.
I can't remember if they won that game or lost. I think they won
game. They didn't lose another game except the Titans that year, so they won that game.
They won that game at Pittsburgh. I think it was the next week, or it was a couple weeks later. The door swings open from the locker room into the media room in Pittsburgh. Remember old Three Rivers Stadium? It was like a little hole in the wall.
It's a dump.
He sees me and just goes nuts. You chicken. Oh, yeah, and that was before the days of all the cameras and everything, so it didn't go viral or anything. But John Saraceno was there and happened to be working for U.S. He was the USA Today columnist, so he wrote about it and put it in there. But yeah, they should have beat the Titans that year. The second time they played them, the Titans blew him out on Sunday night?
It was Christmas. It was the day after Christmas. It was December 26th.
Right.
McNair threw five touchdown passes.
All the tight ends killed him.
And Jackie Harris had a long touchdown, and Samari Rowell had three interceptions in that game. And it was clear by early in the second half, Jacksonville wasn't very interested. They had to win one of their last two.
Right. They were basically clinched the division.
Yeah, they were in good shape. And so they kind of packed it in and said, we'll see you in the playoffs if you even get to us. And I got it. The other thing about that first game in 99, so at the end, after the roll interception, there's still time left.
Well, they took a safety.
They took a safety with the famous Jeff Fisher play that they worked on over and over and over again, which was snap the ball to the punter. Craig Hendrick runs around the end zone as long as he can and steps out. The other 10 guys tackle a guy.
Right.
That's your only job,
right,
is to tackle a guy. Well, there are flags everywhere. I mean, they're throwing hats. They're throwing – because there were like 10, literally 10 holding penalties on the play. Coughlin and the staff come on the field. Wait a minute. The game can't end on a defensive penalty. Whoops. The Titans were still on offense.
Right.
Game ends. Titans win 20-19.
Yep. And when you look at the score – look back at that score, you say 2019, why didn't they kick the field goal? But people forget that they took that safety at the end. Yeah. Or whatever, it was a 3-point game, yeah.
Here's a question for both of you. Do you think that we are starting to get back to the Titans-Jags rivalry of
late? Unquestionably. Yep. I think that's one of the reasons the Titans hired Mike Vrabel, is knowing that the Jacksonville team is going to physically be a bully-type team and that you better have that mentality.
Absolutely. I think they hated Jeff Fisher in Jacksonville, by the way. Absolutely.
Still do.
Oh, they hated him. Absolutely. He's one of the all-time most hated guys there. And you know what I do once in a while is I get him irritated. I say, well, let's get the old fight song out. There was this, remember the Super Bowl song?
I do.
They had a Super Bowl rap song that they made.
What?
The week before the Super Bowl, before the championship game, because they thought they were going to the Super Bowl.
They
the
were
players,
kidding, yeah.
You can find it online. It's something like "Uh-oh," and Fisher played it.
He played it the night before. He held it up. They got like an old school boombox, and Fisher ended the Saturday night meeting before the AFC Championship game playing it, and just walked out. He just dropped it. I mean, he dropped the mic is what he did. He just walked out of the room. Because the first thing that Lorenzo Neal said in the locker room when he walked in after they had won it was, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Must find this song.
It's like
to hear this.
Keenan McCardell is now a coach in Jacksonville, is one of the rappers, and Jimmy Smith and Leon Searcy, and it's like, I'm Big Searcy. I mean, they got this whole rap thing going, and I always joke around and go, maybe they can make another rap song. Don't start that.
But you know, Amy, it's interesting you would say that, because we're playing Thursday Night Football against them in 2015. And Rich Eisen is there for NFL Network, and he so doesn't want to be there. He was talking, you know, he made it clear on the air, why are we doing this game? I said, what you have to understand is this will be a good football game. I know these two teams are at it, but this will be a good football game because there's something there that has the teams generally split every year. Mm-hmm. One team wins when they're not supposed to, and then the other team wins when they're not supposed to, because there's just this college sort of thing. And NFL teams, you know, the Bears and the Packers have it. Different teams have it with each other. It's a great thing.
Right.
It's a great thing for the game.
I agree.
And this year was the first year that I felt – I mean, in years past, yes, we've played the Jags. We usually split with them, as you said. But it's always kind of been like both teams are kind of struggling, so it's not really super exciting. This year, both of those games were physical.
Yep.
They were dirty. It was awesome.
And that kind of
so good.
And that kind of went back to last year, because at the end of the year when Mariota got hurt in that game, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And so they won that game. It kind of carried it over to this year. They don't like each other. And being physical, like you said, mm-hmm. both teams are usually physical, so that it kind of only enhances it.
What other teams do you really like to watch play in this day and time? If they're on TV, you'll stop and watch no matter who the opponent is.
I watch every game because we're in the green room. We have every game on. It's beautiful. It's a great thing. We got 9-10 big TVs in front of us, so I watch every game. But who do I enjoy watching? I like watching Aaron Rodgers play when he plays. I like the great quarterbacks. I want to watch great quarterbacks. Defense, if it's a 6-3 game, it does nothing for me. It really doesn't. So, and I like the offensive strategy. How are you going to attack them? How do you do it? I love watching Brady. You know, everybody has Patriot fatigue. But you got to step back and really appreciate them for what they are. I mean, it's an amazing story. It really is. So, yeah, I like watching the great quarterbacks.
Can we talk about rules changes for a second?
Go.
I have a question. Is this going to be the year that we figure out once and for all what a catch is?
No, because even if they change the rule to take the ground out of it, people are still going to complain about it. We're in an era now with all the social media and Twitter and everything. No matter what the rule is, people are going to complain about it. I remember when the officials were the replacement officials. Remember the abuse the replacement officials
took?
Well, people in the league office told me there were at least 20 guys that were replacement officials that were better than the guys they had. But remember, the media swarm on them was ridiculous.
Oh, sure.
And now they hate these officials.
It was easy.
So now the regular officials come back, and now they all get them. It's a hard game to officiate. They need to add an eighth official, permanently add an eighth official. The game is too fast.
Where would the eighth official be on the field?
That they'd have to work out. I mean, you have to adjust them a little bit, but you need – the game is so fast, it's too fast for the seventh. And a lot of those guys are older.
Right.
And you know, so you got to – I think an eighth official will help alleviate a lot of problems.
I would put the eighth official basically where the umpire is in the two-minute situation, that he would go back to that role – so he could help out line of scrimmage type stuff, eliminating some of that, and maybe drop back and get some things into coverage a little bit more.
Yeah. You could adjust some of the back guys,
right,
too. I mean, I just think that the game is so fast you need an extra guy. Even those, the catch rule, the ground needs to get out of it. I mean, like, they reviewed the Ertz catch in the Super Bowl.
Right.
He took about eight steps and then
sure
fell into the end zone.
But, you know, the thing about that, Pete, is – and Chris Collinsworth got a lot of flack and – I don't know that he said it as artfully as he should have, but his point was, for what it's been called during the season, this is not a catch.
I don't know. He took about four steps, though.
I understand.
See if it was two and then go to the ground.
But they never said, like on the Jesse James play, it was about the completion of the catch to the ground.
But he never really took a couple steps, though. He took like one and then went to the ground.
But if he has enough control of the football to be able to lean it across the goal line, that's a catch. The same way the Ertz play was. Now, Ertz took more steps, you're right. But I think that's what Collinsworth was saying about the throw in the back of the end zone to the back, is there was a bit of a bobble. I think, you know, playing in the backyard, that's a catch.
Right.
But if you're going with what the rules interpretations had been, which was we had way over-interpreted this thing, you know, it was like we were breaking down classical music note by note. It's like, this is ball, man. Come on.
See, I think that rule, they'll take the ground out of it. But then the rule that needs to be changed is a targeting rule. I think they got to make it similar to what the colleges do, but not – they got to do it quicker than the colleges do it. If you put out a player and just lay him out and he goes out with a concussion, why should you not be penalized at all during the process of the game? You should be ejected. You should be ejected. And they don't. They just flag them. So,
do you want a review like college has?
Yeah.
I do, too.
Got to do it quicker, though. Because, look, if a guy is going for somebody and the other guy lowers his head and you blast him, that's not an ejection. But if you throw a forearm into a guy's helmet,
sure,
that's an ejection. So I think you could – it's easy to see, and I think they need to do that.
Yeah, $9,600 is not a deterrent.
That's, no.
They throw that away and, you know, night out on the town. You know, they don't care. So – that's nothing. So I agree with you. I think they need to make it more of a deterrent. And I think, you know, if you want to get safer, then chuck the guys out during the game. If you're in a big game and you get ejected from the game, then that's going to hurt your team a lot more than a $9,600 fine will.
Right.
All right, both of you, 15-yard defensive pass interference. Are you for it or against it?
I'm for it.
I'm against it.
Why?
Because if you're beat, you're pulling them down. It takes.
Right? But it doesn't happen all the time in college. And that's what the penalty is. I mean, that was always the big complaint.
More than in the NFL, though.
Well, yeah, more than in the NFL because it's 15 yards. But,
you know, somebody said you could make it like a clear path in the NBA. Like if the guy's going to score a touchdown and you pull him down, you award him a touchdown. But I said, how do you know he's going to catch the ball?
Well, yeah.
Right.
So it's not like when you're dribbling with the ball and you're going to the layup, you're going to make the layup or the dunk or whatever. It's not the same.
All right, so what passes in Orlando?
I think they'll take the ground out of the catch, for sure. They will do some sort of review of the, you know, unsportsmanlike conduct penalty to the head, I think. But I don't know to that degree. I don't think they'll do it that far.
Do they make more things reviewable this year?
They're trying to speed the game up, so I don't think so.
Right.
I mean, the process is too, but the process should be so much quicker. Do you watch any NBA games?
Sure, I do.
They go right to the sideline and look at the thing. Boom, okay, we're going. Let's go. You know, it needs to be faster.
Well, they tried to do that this year with the guy with the pad who comes out and they're kind of meeting in the field and there's the conference and there's the phone call and the whole thing. In theory, it was supposed to be faster.
Cup of coffee.
Yeah, but it just felt so convoluted.
But
there's got to be a better way to do this.
It took forever.
It took forever. Well, because it's the Super Bowl. But I think it goes back to the judgment based on what Collinsworth was saying for what he got ripped on. Is I'm sure in New York, I'm sure they're having the discussion. Okay, how's this different than the Jesse James play? Because, listen, they know how it looks. They understand, can we really turn this over? Like the famous John Madden story about the Immaculate Reception. Referee goes into the Pirates dugout, picks up the phone. The Madden story of it is, calls upstairs, says, can you guarantee my safety?
Right.
Can you guarantee my safety and the safety of my crew if we call this pass incomplete? With the basis of the idea being, Frenchie Fuqua touched the ball, thus by rules then making it an incomplete pass. And the guy upstairs told him, well, we can. No, he's like, no. Can you guarantee my safety getting out of here? Well, we probably can't guarantee it. Hangs up the phone, steps out of the dugout, touchdown Pittsburgh. I mean, they know.
Nobody's to this day, they don't know who touched it.
They don't.
They have no idea.
Well,
Tennessee, do they know if the miracle went backwards?
Oh, yeah. We know. Just talk to us. Yeah.
You still don't know.
We know. No, it did. I mean, still pictures have shown. The TV angle does not show it properly. The camera right down the 25-yard line shows it.
There's still some debate.
To who?
A lot of people in Jacksonville, outside, they wish they'd done
that. At Buffalo.
I don't think this is the guy to be talking to about that. That's like his whole name.
You're going to the right. I've kept a job all these years based on that, Pete. You just don't seem very grumpy today, Pete.
No, I'm
Prisco.
Not grumpy. I'm not grumpy.
Mike's let down. This is disappointing to Mike this has been lovely.
Your angles are great, and your insight is great. And why I love it, too, is you're a reporter. So you base what you do on fact. You don't. It's not just your opinion. It's your opinion rooted in fact. And it's clear you love it.
I do love it.
You love the NFL.
Love it. Love my job. Love the NFL.
It is so.
It's what I want to do since I was a kid.
Seriously?
Yep.
Wow.
I wrote on the school paper in high school. Played football and actually put my own name in my stories.
Did you really?
That's awesome. That's the way it should be done.
Because I'd interview the coach. He said, who played well? He said, well, you play well. I said, all right, but my name is my own story. Of course I did.
How did that go over?
Yeah, they all gave me crap.
Only Pete Prisco could pull that off.
Yeah, I did.
We should let players do that now. Just like, you write the story. You tell it. It'll be fun.
You know what's funny about that? That's another Coughlin story, by the way. One day he comes out late in the afternoon. He calls me out of the media room. He goes, gives me the look. He always had this look. I go, what? He goes, B minus? I said, what are you talking about? He goes, you gave me a B minus?
Oh, no. The old grades, you grading
graded,
the coaching.
Yeah. He goes, you gave me a B minus? We won 28 to whatever it was. He goes, you gave me a B minus? I said, well, first off, Tom, how do you know you don't read anything? My daughter told me. That's what he said to me. I said, well, here's what I'll do for you, just for you. Tell me the grade you think you should have got, and I'll put that in the paper saying you think you should have got this grade tomorrow. And he stormed off.
Tom Coughlin, Hall of Fame?
Yes.
I
definitely
think he is, too.
He gets credit for building that thing in Jacksonville, and he went to two Super Bowls and won them in New York and beat one of the great teams of all time and the Patriots team that was undefeated. Yeah, absolutely.
It's only fair he gets the respect he deserves.
Yeah, and still going strong, by the way. I mean, sharp as can be.
Well, I think we all knew when he came back in there. First of all, Jacksonville in 2016 was not a 3-13 team. They didn't play well, but they were a better team than that. So it wasn't a surprise they made a jump, but I believe everybody knew that when Coughlin got there to help Dave Caldwell and to help Doug Marrone, that he would maximize what they do. Because, I mean, he did it at Boston College. He's done it wherever he's been. He knows ball. And he knows players.
I'll give you something that won't be popular in Tennessee. Blake Bortles outplayed Marcus Mariota last year.
Statistically.
Yeah, he had a better year. They need to get Marcus Mariota going.
He's going. Don't worry.
Get him going.
We got that.
I think he can, too, but they need to let him go.
And you're not a Bortles hater, either.
No. There's more at play there with that team than him. You know, they love him. The players love him. He's tough.
He's tough. He's an athlete, too. I mean,
and he never misses time. He rushed for 500 and something yards
last
year. See, I think as they get more people around him, he's going to be better. They don't trust – those wide receivers were kids last year.
Well, and that's the truth about Mariota, too.
Yeah. You know, people don't realize when a rookie receiver comes into the league, he has no earthly idea where he's going.
No.
Right.
Most of those route concepts are reading on the run, so you got to – You know, Drew Brees told me last year, and this was amazing to me, but he told me he threw completed 100 so passes where he didn't see the receiver. I went, what? Never saw him. I said, well, how do you do that? He says, by repping it and repping it and repping it and knowing where that receiver is going by the coverage, and he knows where the coverage and where he's going. 100 passes. He never saw him.
Is there a better interview than Drew Brees?
He's good. When you get him going on football, he's fantastic.
Who else is on that list for Pete Prisco?
Matt Ryan's on that list.
Really?
Matt Ryan's great. Matt Ryan might be one of the – you sit down with Matt Ryan, you get – I do anyways. I have great respect for him.
That's interesting because from the outside, you don't perceive that.
No, he seems – I mean, he seems very nice, very lovely, but – and I've never spoken to him. He seems lovely, but, like, I would never think that he would be that guy.
No, he's good. You know, Bortles is actually a really good guy.
Oh, yeah, he's a quality human being.
Takes a ton of abuse in that city, tons, and stands there – every game, win or lose, he's right there. He's a really good kid and probably doesn't deserve the crap he takes.
Who's on your toughest to interview list all time?
I've had many run-ins with guys. I mean, I can't put like guys like Randy Moss and those guys on there, but, you know, Mariota's hard to – he's hard to get for me.
Well, he doesn't give a lot.
He's very accommodating.
Absolutely. He does not give a lot of himself in terms of personal feelings. He does not share much about himself. He'll talk about the team.
Right.
He'll talk about teammates. He'll talk about football.
But doesn't let you in at all.
No.
I like Taylor Lewan.
Oh. Taylor Lewan is a fun guy to
I like Taylor Lewan.
I did. Amy and I did a show with him 3 years ago every Thursday night. And it was the scariest experience of my entire career because I'm telling you.
It was amazing.
We did not know what he was going to do.
I walked into the locker room last year, and he looks at me and he goes, ugh, you got a tan. You're not working.
That's pretty good.
I go, how do you know? You know,
But I'm saying for you, that's a great line. Yeah, a great opener.
Yeah. I give him – one of my things that I've always learned over the years is you got to give it right back to him. I give it right back to him. I always have. The players, they give me crap. I give it right back
to him. Most of them love it.
They do. They want you to give it back to them, you know, and you have to. I've seen guys, you know, you've seen it too, where you go in a locker room and some reporter goes in there and they start giving him crap and he doesn't know what to do.
Oh, yeah.
They
and
panic.
Then they just keep going and it gets worse. You know, you got to give it back to them.
Who's the old guy who got you when you were new, when you were just starting out? Because I've had the experience.
Players?
Yeah, coach, whoever. Scare you to death when you were a kid.
Well, Shula scared me.
I bet.
Shula scared me. Don Shula was intimidating. That was like when I was first starting out. He was very intimidating. I mean, when we were in college, we used to go. It was great. We were in college at Arizona State. The PR guy for the Suns made a deal with us working on the paper that two of us had to be at every game, but we had to run quotes.
Oh.
And we had to run quotes for the NBA guys, and then they fed us because we were in college. We were thrilled. We had to eat at the game and go to the NBA games, and all we had to do was go run quotes. So we're college kids. We go in the NBA locker room, and we're asking these guys, and they're like looking at you. That was when the NBA was like half outlaws, too. They look at you, who the hell are you? You know, and you'd have to, that's when you learn to stand up for yourself a little bit, or otherwise they're going to embarrass the hell out of you.
Who got you, Mike?
Probably an SEC basketball coach in an era of really good SEC basketball in the 80s. But I covered for the student radio station and would go in and ask 900-word analytical questions after a 70-67 game and would just get that look. I got tormented a lot by Johnny Majors, though. But it wasn't personal. He'd give you the business in front of people, but then he didn't hold a grudge, which I've always had respect for people like that could separate the human being from the job.
You know, player-wise, and you guys will remember him, but this guy was one of the all-time worst, was Gary Walker.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember Gary Walker?
Oh, yeah.
He used to threaten to – he'd walk over to me and go, I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah.
And I go, do it right here, Gary.
Played for us, too. He was a lot of fun.
I go, Gary, Gary, do it right here because I'll take a piece of every tackle you get the rest of your life. And one day I was riding down the road in Jacksonville, and this car pulls up next to me. I'm like, what's going on here? Rolls down the window, and it's Gary Walker. And he goes, I'm coming after you, man.
Ooh.
He was an Oiler my first year. And, yeah, he was a lot of fun. Very, very accommodating. Not lovely.
Yeah,
and then he was working. Then he was working in the media.
Of course,
one year at the Super Bowl.
That's
I go, Gary.
Always what happens.
I saw him. I go, Gary. This might be the funniest thing ever. You working in the media. It's unbelievable.
It was like Reggie Wayne. hated the media. He was mean to them.
Well, see, I had a good relationship with Reggie
Gosh.
Wayne.
Well, maybe he was just mean to the PR staff, but he gave us such a hard time. I just ran into him at the Pro Bowl, working for NFL Network. I was like, what is this?
Marvin was the hard one.
Marvin was tough, too.
Marvin was a pain.
It's hard for PR.
See, I always had a great relationship with Peyton.
Yeah.
I always had it. He always, because you know why? One year, I went to his camp before it became big, and I sat in the, I didn't even know him. I sat in his dorm room. It was just me and him in his dorm room when he was younger for about 45, 50 minutes. And we just, and ever since then, he always gave me
He's another one that respects work. If you work, he has time for you. He's not going to be your buddy or your pal, but he goes to and respects those who work.
And he'll pick your brain.
He sure will.
That's the best thing about him.
Well, that's the story we tell about when we were covering recruiting. We would call him after he'd get back from a visit. He would give you nothing, and then he would pick your brain about what you were hearing.
Right.
And finally, you'd have to get off the phone with him. You'd say, look, I've got to call other kids.
Yeah. He's
That's when he was 17.
Yeah, he's always been that way. He might be, of all the guys I've ever covered, he might be my favorite guy. Because I always had a good relationship with him. He always gave me time by myself. And for a star to do that, it's hard to do, but he always did.
Pete Prisco, it has been a delight. You have been lovely.
You have been lovely.
I've been nice, huh?
Pete Prisco,
nice.
CBS Sports.
I got to go do a hit right now in my place. Maybe I'll put my ogre face on or something.
Okay.
There it is.
It's good being with
you. I can see Mike Freeman. Maybe I'll start with him.
Thank you for joining the official Titans podcast. We have enjoyed talking football with you.
It was fun.
It was fun. Thank you.
All right, guys.